Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Paul.
Now, this is something we do on a fairly or semi-regular basis, and we're very grateful that Sam's able to come in and have a chat with us and let us know what's going on with regards council, because that really affects everybody, not just ratepayers. So I thought I'd start off and have a bit of a chat about the fact that there's a fair bit of work going on in the region, and I noticed that some of it is bushfire remediation, so I'm hoping that's not premature. Ebor Falls, temporary closure, $5 million upgrade for facilities there.
Yeah, look, this is all about, you know, we've received grants for various things, or different organisations have received grants where council is the body that administers the grants and does the work. So, yeah, it's just about, I think ducks seem to be lining up in a row, so we can, you know, we can get the work done that that has been, you know, long promised.
Any idea how long that takes, or is that a bit like a piece of string?
It's a piece of string. The whole, I think the council works budget is just like eating an elephant. You start and it's always there.
But I see that there are going to be some new lookouts in a visitor precinct, and it's a nice area, so I think it could be a win for everyone.
I think it'll be a win for everyone. That said, it's been closed off for a while. I went through with some family, with family from overseas visiting, and we stopped in at Ebor Falls, and unfortunately, a lot of it was closed. So it'll be great when that's done,
and probably great for Ebor as well. Let's move on to the Lynch's Road netball court lighting.
Oh, look, that's that's been done in various stages. I can't recall what was done and when, but again, this is just different grants that the Netball Association has received, but council is the manager of that, and you know, handles the process, gets the contractors in, and makes sure that it goes along. And it's also another example of different community groups working with council to access government funding.
And traditionally in this country, netball was the number one participation sport for women and girls. I believe that some of the football and the cricket codes are catching up, may even have overtaken them, but it is really, really popular. So good to see that's happening.
Hugely popular. My wife is a frustrated former netball player, and part of that frustration is because my girls aren't as enthusiastic about it as she is.
Funny how they don't always follow in our path, isn't it?
It is.
The former gasworks remediation, I believe, started right back in 2005 with the main site remediation occurring to allow the supermarket or the shopping centre to be built. But I believe there's some more ongoing work with that.
Look, that's been held up for a while. So that's stage one of the Creeklands Master Plan. And there's an Aboriginal cultural heritage assessment that hasn't yet been finalised, and that's the current stumbling block with that. But you know, where it's something that I'm really conscious of is getting the Creeklands up and running, because I do see that as, you know, the second heart of our city done properly. Because at the moment the Creeklands, really from the gasworks site right through to Cook's Road, it's a magnificent opportunity that just hasn't been capitalised on.
I agree with you entirely. And even that area behind the swimming pool is very often just full of reeds, and the little bridge is in a state of disrepair. Yeah. And that's potentially a very pretty little area.
It is. It is. You know, there's some great trees there, big, old, established trees. And so we need that. And I'm not sure exactly the status of it, because my role as mayor isn't one of operations. So, you know, I do notice the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Assessment that is still ongoing or hasn't been finalised. And then when that's done, because the money's available, we had a struggle last year getting a contractor involved, and that will always...
We all experience that.
We all experience that, don't we? I think we're experiencing it throughout the state. So for that stage one of the Creeklands, Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Assessment, then making sure that the contractor is locked in and ready to go.
I mean, I was intrigued when I was doing some research for the interview to find out just how much is going on. So let's move to the upgrade to the Armidale and Gyra sale yards. And I believe these are being funded under the Bushfire Local Economic Recovery Fund.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
About the source of funding there, Paul. These are something that have been around for a while. So Gyra will become the sheep selling centre and Armidale will be the cattle selling centre there. So, yeah, some funds came in. There was a push from the agents who run the sale yards for those upgrades to happen. I think certainly at the sheep end of things, the sheep selling centre, what was in place really wasn't up to current standards. So
Gyra for sheep, Armidale for cattle.
That's it. Yes.
And that's probably a good move. We've talked previously about the ongoing Demerick Dam Reserve redevelopment and the Kempsey Road upgrade seems to be a never-ending one.
Well, Demerick Dam is going to be open to the public on the 16th of December.
In time for Christmas and
New
Year
picnics. Christmas. It's a soft opening because the upgraded playground and the jetty are apparently held up at customs or whatever. There's just been a delay getting that. So we will be fencing off the playground area so that can't be used. But when it's ready to go and when the jetty's in, we'll have a proper fancy launch. But I know on the 16th, my fellow councillor John Galletly has been working, I think, with the Angling Club and BCF to have a big fishing competition out there on the 16th. So more of that will hit social media and will be promoted just about it opening. It's a soft open. And I tell you what, the recent rain's been great because there's something like, I think, 1,300 trees and shrubs were planted out there. There's some turfs gone down, some seeding, just because all of the work's been done. We just need the grass to come through.
And the rain's been the icing on the cake, to use a bad pun. You and I have talked about the Renewable Energy Community Benefit Framework in the past, and it was adopted by council. I can quote you here, as a responsible council, we need to ensure that any benefits that can be derived from the creation of the REZ are not only shared throughout the community, but more importantly, provide an intergenerational benefit.
Sounds wise.
How does the Oven Mountain Pumped Hydro Energy Storage Program fit with that?
Oven Mountain, so the state government has released their draft renewable benefit framework, and that is specifically around wind and solar. And their guidance was $1,050 per megawatt hour per annum per project. To be paid if it's a wind project, or $850 per megawatt hour per annum if it's a solar project. The benefit guidelines put out by the department specifically exclude storage and batteries, of which Oven Mountain is one.
And yes,
pumped hydro is a storage and considered a big battery. So we are in negotiations. I met with the ownership of Oven Mountain has changed in that Alinta Energy is now the 100% owner. They were part owners, but they bought out the smaller group that put it together. And so whether Oven Mountain proceeds or not, so technically they've worked out it's feasible. Actually, they need a bit more. I think they said 18 months just to finalise the geology to make sure that technically it's feasible.
We don't want to lose a tunnel driller like they've done down in the Snowies, do we?
No, actually, I asked them about that because that's, the Florence getting stuck in the Snowies is pretty topical. But they said, no, they'd be more a drill and blast approach. And so they just have to get a better understanding of what the geology is that they'll be going through. 18 months, they will know whether technically it is feasible. So theoretically, it's feasible. Technically, is it feasible? We'll know in 18 months' time. And then, based on that, they'll be able to work out how much it's going to cost, and then it has to, does it stack up financially to be feasible?
So council supporting it?
Council is agnostic on all of these things, and that's probably that point in there. This is about a responsible council. We can only assess what's in front of us, and what I find is a lot of people in the community want council to take a position one way or another on a particular project, and if you don't see things their way, they consider you aren't leaders. My view is that the renewable energy zone is coming, so we need to have discussions with every proponent that turns up about what it looks like should their project get up, because we are not the consent authority, the state government is. And I guess ultimately their financiers, the proponents' financiers are going to be the ones that determine as well. Anyway, long and the short, if Oven Mountain goes ahead, Oven Mountain, it doesn't matter whether we're supportive or not. In fact, we put an objection into their EIS because of their lack of engagement with council and the wider community.
I'm going to go there in a minute.
Yeah, it was fluff. And so that's why the new owners, Alinta Energy, the new 100% owners, came to see us, and we are working through what a community benefit would look like.
I said I was going to go there in a moment. How can a member of the public work through the 5,000-plus pages of environmental impact statement and make a comment within the 28-day public exhibition period?
You can't, is the long and the short of it. When that came out, one of the first things I did was wrote to the minister seeking an extension of that, because the Oven Mountain OOMPS, as they're called, Oven Mountain Pumped Storage Project, had spent years, and they had techies and everyone to put it together. I think realistically, for an individual, they're just going to have to go to the sections that interest them and look at it. What we often see are different groups get together and say, all right, Paul, you look at the geology, you know, Sam, you look at whatever. So I think that's how it happens. Council is in the throes. We are about to employ somebody to assist with all of that, certainly about the bits that interest the council.
And going back to what you said before, there's a fine line sometimes in politics between leading and representing the views of the community. And political bodies will always find themselves, in my view, at times taking what appears to be a different view to the community, or what may be the perceived predominant view in the community, because they do need to provide leadership, and sometimes we'll have information that the general public don't have. It's a balancing act, isn't it?
It is, and the rate rise is a classic example of that. Mm. I mean, if you went out and asked anyone, do you want to pay more in rates? The answer is going to be no. That said, I note last night Tamworth, they approved to go through the same process Armidale went through. They're lagging us by 12 months, of course. And so they're going through the same process. Mm. I think it was something like 97%.
What did they learn from you?
97% of their responses to the survey said don't do it. We were about 85%, so we had 15% of people actually took the time to write in and go, crack on with it.
Mm. Let's go to the draft Ecological Sustainable Development Policy, the ESD. It's hoping to provide incentives to people who build energy efficient and sustainable buildings, and council is committed to achieving 030 carbon neutral standards and reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. I mentioned in one of our previous talks when we were discussing this, and people, when they buy a house pretty much with their heart, allegedly. Yes, when you buy a car, you look at the maintenance and the ongoing costs. And I think I said at the time that perhaps we need to even educate or put something out to people encouraging to look at the maintenance, energy, water and other costs associated with the new house that they buy and encourage people to get on board with this.
I think you're right there, Paul. I note that the banks are... No, I read an article somewhere. that if there are two houses exactly the same, but one has rooftop solar and the other doesn't, that the valuers will probably up that the value of that rooftop solar place by $100,000.
But there's also insulation.
There is insulation.
Curtains, pelmets. It's a very complex area, I guess, but it can be simplified, and it's often been a curiosity to me that the people don't look at the cost of ongoing maintenance and running of a house that they buy, but they will with a car. I'm not quite sure why there's a differential there. But anyway, just...
Well, I'm a classic there. We bought what is now a 110-year-old weatherboard house that has the thermal mass of a paper bag.
I understand. I bought a 98. Mine's 98 years old at the moment. But I've done a lot of work on it, and yes. I started off doing that sort of work initially and made a great difference. Council's made changes to the drought management scheme, and I don't need to tell you the figures, but you might like to talk about that, the 90 and 80%.
I'll tell you why that came about. Really, until about 10 days ago, there was real concern amongst councillors, amongst council staff, and also, but also amongst the community, just about how dry everything was getting. And, you know, when are we going to move to water restrictions? And it was felt really acutely with our rural ratepayers, those, you know, we're carting water for stock and the like. But in town, we were fine. But that's because our total dam storage was in the realm of about 96% at the time. And really from... So what we needed to do was to make a statement and just get people to think about water conservation. Now, rather than redo the entire drought management plan, the easiest thing to do was to hit the stage one and stage two restrictions, or actually increase those. So the stage one restrictions kick in, well, in the original drought management plan that was formulated in 2021, stage one kicked in when total dam storage was at 80%, so we moved that to 90%, and we were getting very close until this recent rain. The stage two was kicking in at 70%, but we've upped that to 80%. Now, had we gone further into stage three and four and five, that's where it starts to impact industry and really requires a lot more thinking. So the tinkering was able to be done at stage one and two, to buy us some time.
And following on from that, council is investigating a possible subsidised rainwater tank program.
Yes, and it hasn't been any further than that. We're not sure what that looks like, who gets it, what size tank, is it a bit of a sliding scale, does it cap out? But that's just about utilising, you know, all of the water that runs off our roofs.
And you might or might not remember, but I made the point to you that if I live a metre outside, my house is a metre outside the council boundary, apparently my rainwater tank water is safe, and I live within the council boundary, it's not.
I'm not sure about that.
It's a curious one. Obviously, I think council wants to sell and make money and out of water, but... It's not just the garden that can benefit, or the three areas that you can use your tank for are the garden,
yep,
clothes washing, laundry, and toilets. And I think I made the point to you that I believe that even if I have a certified filter that meets Australian standards, I still can't use that water in the kitchen. But if we got really, really low and people had sufficient tanks, it may make a difference.
It might. I don't know how much water you drink, but there you go.
Or cook with.
Or cook with.
Yeah. Or wash dishes with.
Yeah.
All of those things. A few quickies. Has a decision been reached as when to proceed with work on the extension or raising of Malpas?
That situation hasn't changed.
Right.
So it's probably going to be mid next year, so July to September next year. The decision's been made to do it.
Have engineering plans been completed?
No, because it's the engineering plans and the technical documents for both Malpas Dam and Oakey Dam and the pipeline. So all of those engineering works are still being worked on.
Because this all feeds into our water security, doesn't it?
It does.
And I'm just throwing a few at you around water security.
So the decision to raise Malpas has been voted on ages ago, which meant that we then proceeded with, we're now down the path working with Public Works Authority to get those engineering and the tender documents ready, which we need because whilst we have funding for about 80%, we have $27 million of funding for Malpas, but the indication is it might be cost $35 million, so we're 8 short. And we also need to get Oakey, the wall repaired there. We need to know exactly how much we're asking for.
Is the funding secure or is it time limited? I mean, if this process goes on too long, do we lose any funding apart from costs going up?
No, not really. Not for Malpas, no. Right. No.
What about Oakley? Oakey Dam?
Oakey Dam hasn't received any funding.
So no news on the ground.
No.
Another big one, going back to my earlier questions about development and building around Armidale, the proposed Armidale East Mall redevelopment.
Yes, we've got yet another meeting, I think, on the 12th of December. So members of the shop owners along there, some members of the community, plus councillors, plus staff, involved in, not necessarily working on, we have some advisors that have done some design work as well, just to redefine that and make it more of a defined precinct, the East Mall, and what we'll likely come out with are three options for that will go on public exhibition. And that'll be public exhibition, I think, for a size of 3 to 6 months. So we want the feedback.
Here's not 5,000 pages
not
in 28
5,
days.
Pages in 28 days, no. No, we're actually genuinely keen to get people's feedback.
Because there's been a lot of dissatisfaction historically over the way Beardy Street has been developed through there and shopkeepers haven't been happy, and it's not a welcoming place.
No, it's not.
Parking is minimal. It's not easy to get to, and we have winters. It's nice to park close to where you're going.
Yes, look, we put some money towards getting these plans done, and then we'll work out next steps.
Let us know. I see the council have endorsed the customer service promise. You're trying to this has been something, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that has, in years gone by, people have been fairly dissatisfied with the service that they receive from council. I've noticed a considerable change, I must say.
Yeah, I'd like to say it's a civic leadership improvement.
The customer-facing aspect.
Yes. Look, you only ever hear the bad stories. I am also very aware of some appalling behaviour by our public towards just a real sense of righteousness and imperiousness.
And it is fair to make the comment, this is both sides. This is not one way. This is about the engagement.
Yeah, of course. And so part of that promise is this is what you can expect from us. And our general manager, James Roncon, has spent a lot of time and effort and money, let's be honest, improving the culture within council, and that's come along in leaps and bounds. And part of that we expect, and I know it is flowing through to the way that we interact with the public, and we've also have a bit of a zero tolerance for poor behaviour from the public. If someone comes in and starts shouting, you're out.
Well, you've got a duty of care to your staff.
We do have a duty of care to the staff. So James or I will come out straight away, shut it down, and you've got to go and take a cool, just cool down, cup of tea, come back in a day or so with a heartfelt apology, and then we can pick it up. Absolutely no wriggle room at all for appalling behaviour.
I'm all in favour. The proposed Gyra demerger talks, is this being treated seriously? Is this actually something that may happen, or is it talk that's floating around?
Well, I think it's talk that's floating around. I've happened to be talking to the local government minister, and he was referring to the Cootamundra demerger, and he said it's just never going to happen. Now, I know that he was written to by the Save and Grow group. They received a letter back from the minister. The long and the short of it is the Save and Grow group, whoever is behind a demerger, will have to actually fund the demerger process. So the state government is not going to fund the demerger process. Council is not going to fund the demerger process. So whoever is seeking to demerge is going to have to put their hand in their pocket to ensure that every I's been dotted, every T's been crossed, and the submission is of a standard that's acceptable to the state government.
Because ultimately this goes through the office of the state government minister for local government,
the minister for, it does, and also I believe the Boundaries Commission has a look at it as well.
Boundaries Commission as well,
Look, that's something that I spend zero time thinking about and will continue until it becomes a reality or otherwise. So at the moment it's...
I suspect otherwise.
Well, you never know.
Apparently there were 10,500 signatures on the Trains North petition to the state government. Is this something you spend any time worrying or thinking about?
Oh, look, more power to them. They took them 10 years to get 10,000 signatures, and I believe that about 70% of those signatures were from the northern tablelands, so that means about 3,000 were from outside. Adam Marshall, I believe, has tabled that in Parliament, and it's going to be debated sometime in the new year. So I think it's a good thing. It'll go before state government, and that is a great opportunity for the state government to actually articulate a position. I know that they have articulated positions before in writing, which hasn't necessarily been met with hasn't necessarily been what the petitioners were expecting. So anyway, we'll see what they come up with. But my position on the whole trains thing is, if the trains were running, brilliant, I'm all for it. I'd be fighting to keep it, but the fact that they haven't been running for 34 years, it's going to cost billions of dollars. The only way that it's ever going to come back is if there's the state government money and the state government will. And hitherto, that's not on the table.
But sometimes having a position and actually demonstrating your support of that position can be two different things in politics. And I suspect that you're pointing to that as well.
Yes, aren't you? Yeah.
I'm happy to say it. A quick one. How's the scooter trial going?
I think it's great.
All right. I don't. But
you don't. A few others don't.
But like cockroaches in my mind and some people's mind, it's always going to be a divisive issue. But there you are.
I think
it's not a first tier issue.
I think it's tidied up a little bit. So I'm not noticing them, I'll use this word advisedly or in inverted commas, littering as much. So I think people are getting better. You can't legislate against idiocy, and you get reports of people walking along the street just pushing the scooters over. I mean,
there's a lot of things you're scratching.
There's a lot of things you can't do.
And littering was, quote unquote, was one of my issues.
Yeah.
And you can't legislate against bad behaviour.
No, you can't legislate against
stupid idiocy, basically. Let's use the word. Yeah,
That's right. You can't legislate against that. You also have to have a bit of civic mindedness. So I've had some people get in touch and say, look, if a scooter's fallen over on the street, whose responsibility is to move it? Well, if you're a civic minded sort of person, pick it up. That would be my view. Then they'll say, oh, it's parked across the street. You'd fine a car for that. Who are you going to fine? Well, the answer is we wouldn't fine a car for parking across the street because it'd probably be moved in a few hours by the time a ranger got there. So we don't have this, this flying squad of people to book a car parked across a footpath. In the same way, we don't have a flying squad to book. What I would ask is for people to be a bit civic-minded, and that will flow through. But if you're minded to sit there and moan and bitch and write in, well, things fall apart.
Sam, I was actually formally fined for parking my car on the other side of the street on the basis that I was 30 metres from the curb.
Whereabouts is that? Here.
Sydney.
Oh, there you go.
But I'm just making the point, some people, I moved to Armidale indeed. A serious one.
Yeah.
Armidale and New Gumbanja descendants are extremely disappointed that the signage as you enter Armidale welcomes people to the land of the Anawan tribe, and I suspect you've had a lot of communication on this.
Yeah, we have. And look, that was a tough one, and certainly a really contentious one. And what was originally proposed, I think it was back in May by Councillor Brad Widders, was that we Armidale put on the boundary of the LGA, so the entrances to the Armidale LGA, so say Ebor, south of the airport, etc. Welcome to the Armidale. It doesn't matter what the words were, but it acknowledged a number of different tribes, and the Gambangya weren't on that, and that was a real problem. And council, as a whole, with the exception of Councillor Widders, voted that down with a view to finding out what we can do. So this is considered a bit of a first step. The overwhelming indications that we received is that Armidale itself, the Armidale city limits, would be most likely Anawan. The wider LGA, it seems, Anawan, Gumbunya, Dungudi, possibly Banbai as well. So what's happened around Armidale city limits, and the signs aren't up yet, is a first step, and there will likely be more. But, I do feel for the Gumbunya. I'm not making light of their views or anything like that. I suspect there'll be some challenges from them, and because certainly they've indicated they will. More power to them. The other thing is, it doesn't carry weight what council has done. It's not a native title determination, so it's not. It doesn't stop people living here, people interacting, or et cetera, et cetera.
But words and actions do matter, as we know.
They do matter, but it's also important that you understand at what point words are words.
So this goes back to something you said right at the beginning about sometimes leadership is taking a position even if you know it isn't popular. Is that falling into that?
On
the basis of the best information you can get?
That's what it is, but I just would feel a bit uncomfortable with this being seen as leadership, because that sort of indicates we know best. But it certainly is what we feel is the right thing to do.
I'm going to finish off and give you a pat on the back, actually. I noted that Council, Armidale Regional Council, won a category for risk, rural, regional and council, a county council and overall winner in the Risk Management Excellence Awards for New South Wales. That's all a bit of a mouthful. I stumbled over it, and who would know? But I take that one out.
Yeah, that is a win. I can't take any credit for that whatsoever. That really is our general manager and the team. So that really is about the internal operations. And it's great to have a tangible sign that the cultural change has occurred. The cultural change that has been needed for a long, 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 long time.
And that's why I brought it up. Yeah. We've all known of the poor history of Armidale, various Armidale councils, councillors and the administrative side, and it's not been a paradigm of virtue amongst councils at all. So to see, it did strike me that being in the risk management category as well is, from my background, a biggie. It means you're being proactive and you're thinking and you're looking for what may or may not be go wrong or be valuable to the future as well, because that's how risk management operates.
Well, that's true. It really is at the core. It means that the foundations of the organisation are in good stead.
Yeah. No. Well, congratulations on that. Thank you very much for coming in and giving us your time, as you do. We're most grateful. I think it's a great way of getting a lot of the more arcane, or perhaps some of the items that people don't know out in the general mind. So appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time.
Terrific. Thanks, Paul.